是不是的？All glories assembled about you. All glories assembled about you. All glories assembled about you. All glories to you, Shantavati. So today we're reading from the first canto, chapter 17. We're going to go over text 29, 30, and 31. And so I guess for the first two verses, we can just say the verses together, say the word for word together in the translation. I'll read the purport, and then we'll just do responsibly the last one. Cham jigam sum abhi pritya Vihaya Nipravanchanam Tatpara Mulam Shirasa Samadha Bhava Vivala Tam, him, you can say it with me if you want. Jigam Sun, willing to kill. Abhipreta, knowing it well. Vihaya, leaving aside. Nipalanchanam, the dress of a king. Tadpada Mulam, at his feet. Shirasa, by the head. Samagat, fully surrendered. Vaya Vivala, under pressure of fearfulness. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he at once abandoned the dress of a king, and under pressure of fear, completely surrendered to him, bowing his head. Purport. The royal dress of the personality of Kali is artificial. The royal dress is suitable for a king or kshatriya, but when a lower class man artificially dresses himself as a king, his real identity is disclosed by the challenge of a bona fide kshatriya like Maharaj Prakrit. A real kshatriya never surrenders. He accepts the challenge of his rival kshatriya, and he fights either to die or to win. Surrender is unknown to a real kshatriya. In the age of Kali, there are so many pretenders dressed and posed like administrators or executive heads, but their real identity is disclosed when they are challenged by a real kshatriya. Therefore, when the artificially dressed personality of Kali saw that to fight Maharaj Prakrit was beyond his ability, he bowed down his head like a subordinate and gave up his royal dress. Text 30. You can say it with me if you like. Patitam padayo vira vipaya dina vatsala sharanya navati shlokya aham teram asaniva. Patitam, fallen. Padayo, at the feet. Vira, the hero. Kripaya, out of compassion. Dina Vatsala, kind to the poor. Sharanya, one who is qualified to accept surrender. Na, na. Avidit, did kill. Shlokya, one who is worthy of being sung. Aha, said. Cha, also. Idam, this. Asan, smiling. Eva, life. Translation. Maharaj Prakrit, who was qualified to accept surrender and worthy of being sung in history, did not kill the poor, surrendered, and fallen Kali, but smiled compassionately, for he was kind to the poor. Therefore, even an ordinary kshatriya does not kill a surrendered person. And what to speak of Maharaj Prakrit, who was by nature compassionate and kind to the poor? He was smiling because the artificially dressed Kali had disclosed his identity as a lower class man, and he was thinking how ironic it was that although no one was saved from his sharp sword when he desired to kill, the poor lower class Kali was spared by his timely surrender. Maharaj Prakrit's glory and kindness are therefore sung in history. He was a kind and compassionate emperor, fully worthy of accepting surrender even from his enemy. Thus the personality of Kali was saved by the will of Providence. Okay, so this one. Responsibly, Raju Vacha. Natte Gudakeshi Chodaranam. Varanjali Vayamasti Kinchit. Navarti avyam bhavata katanchana Shitre mariye tramadharma bandhu. Okay, one more time. Nate durakeshe yashodhanam Varanjali vayabhayam asti kinchit. Navarti davyam bhavata katanchana Shri Tre Mariye Tama Dharma Bandhu. Nate Gudakesha Yashodhanam Varanjali Vayabhayam Asti Kinchit. Navarti avyam bhavata katanchana. Kantana.
Chaitre
Mariye Tama Dhamma Bandhu.
Chaitre Mariye
Tama Dhamma Bandhu. Te Buddha Kesha Yashodhanam. Param-dhu-bhava-mashti-kinchit-vartitavyam-bhava-taka-kanchana-vartitavyam-bhava-taka-kanchana-shekhe-mariye-tama-dhamma-bandhu. Nathe-gura-kesha-yashantaram. Vadam Jureva Bhamakti Kinchit Navarti Tavyam Navarti Tavyam Bhavatakantanya Chetre Bandhu. Any ladies? Te pura ke saya sodana Padam jale vai vai hasti kinche Na bhakti karyam bhavata katanchan Shetre mariye tama dhamma bandhu. Te dura te sola sodana Padam jale vai vai hasti kinche Na bhakti karyam bhavata katanchana Shetre mariye tama dhamma bandhu. Nathe gura kesha yashodhanam Varanjala vabhayam hasti kinchit Na bhakti davyam bhavatakta kanchana Vetre mariye tama dhamma bandhu. We will say it together. Raju vacha. The king said, na, na, te, your, Gurukesha, Arjuna, Yashadharanam, of us who inherited the fame, Vada Anjali, one with folded hands, Vai, certainly, Vayam, here, Asti, there is, Kinshit, even a slight. Na, neither. Vartitavyam can be allowed to live. Bhavata, by you. Katanchana, by all means. Shetre, in the land. Mariye, in my kingdom. Tvam, you. Adharma Bandhu, the friend of your religion. Translation, the king thus said, we have inherited the fame of Arjuna. Therefore, since you have surrendered yourself with folded hands, you need not fear for your life, but you cannot remain in my kingdom, for you are the friend of irreligion. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Kali, who is a friend of all kinds of irreligiosities, may be excused if he surrenders. But in all circumstances, he cannot be allowed to live as a citizen in any part of a welfare state. The Pandavas were entrusted representatives of the personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna practically brought into being the Battle of Kurukshetra, but not for any personal interest. He wanted an ideal king like Maharaj Yudhisthira and his descendants like Maharaj Prickett to rule the world. And therefore, a responsible king like Maharaj Prickett could not allow the friend of irreligiosity to flourish in his kingdom at the cost of the good fame of the Pandavas. That is the way of wiping out corruption in the state and not otherwise. The friends of irreligiosity should be banished from the state, and that will save the state from corruption. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So here we have the Marsh Cricket who is ready to kill Kali because he's bringing in irreligion. He's a personified irreligion. And he's dressed as a king, but he has none of the qualities of a king. So Marsh Cricket, he really wants to kill him, but he doesn't do it, number one, because that would be irreligious, because if someone surrenders to you, I learned a lot about Kshatriya code that I didn't understand before, so I was really happy to learn some of those things. But you're not. If someone surrenders and you kill them, he said then he would bring irreligion, would reside in him, and it would never die. So he had to accept him. And of course, also because he's a very advanced devotee, Marsh Cricket, he can understand that even Kali has a soul. And somehow, you know, that's the best way for all of us to see difficult situations and difficult people and difficult relationships is that, you know, we're all guided by the three modes of material nature. And if we can see through that to the soul, it makes it a lot easier for us to to tolerate without being disturbed. So Maharishi Cricket was that kind of a king. He was a great king, not like, you know, you look at our leaders of today, and it's very unfortunate because we don't have any Raja Rishis, we don't have any God men. You know, there's so much, just like the legs of the cow, and how, you know, one of them stood for mercy, one of them stands for cleanliness, one of them stands for austerity, one stands for truthfulness. So just looking at truthfulness in terms of leaders, they just all lie, and everybody just kind of accepts it. Oh yeah, politics, there's lots of lies, but still this is a great guy. You know, Biden lies, Trump, actually, I saw as I was looking these things up, 30,500 times that he lied or presented some false information. And just go down the line, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, doesn't really matter who they are, they all were not pure devotees. So we're in a situation where we're being led, no matter pretty much what country you're in, by people who are not pure devotees, who are struggling with the three modes of material nature. They're struggling with anger, you know, lust and greed. So the Kshatriya code was so wonderful because, you know, Kshatriyas, number one, they listened to their elders. They were not allowed to disobey the elders. And King Yudhisthira especially, he took a vow that he would never disobey his elders. And also, Kshatriya was known to keep their word. So for me, I could never really understand the whole gambling match and the whole putting up of Draupadi and nobody doing anything. It just sounded so ridiculous and to me. So I learned that because Yudhisthira took these vows and because, you know, Dhritarashtra was his surrogate parent, his father died, but, you know, Dhritarashtra was his surrogate parent. So Shakuni invited him to the dice game, and then Dhritarashtra asked him to go and play. So because he took the vow of surrendering to his elders and not disobeying them, he felt he had to go to the dice game. And so he did. And everything that transpired after that. And all along he was thinking, well, you know, Krishna's my friend. I know Krishna will help me. So he didn't just keep on gambling because, you know, he was in a fever of gambling. He kept thinking, Krishna's going to save me. And of course,
Chaitanya Charan, when I was reading about this, he explained there's different kinds of ethics. There's categorical ethics where you just follow what you just follow kind of blindly, just like you just there. You said, I took a vow, I'm going to follow Dhritarashtra and my elders just no matter what, and because it's also the Kshatriya code. So that's what he did. But then when so many things happened and they were exiled and he came back from exile, and still Duryodhan, you know, he wouldn't give them enough land that would fit on the head of a pin. Chaitanya Charan explains that he kind of moved over to, instead of categorical ethics, to contextual ethics, where you actually perceive there's a hierarchy of principles. And that hierarchy, in this case, he couldn't really trust Dhritarashtra that would do what the best thing was for his family. If they had no land, how could they provide for their families? How could they even live? So at that point, he had to change. And as I was reading that, I was thinking about how many of us were involved in such a situation. You know, we might have grown up, you know, Christian, Jewish, you know, those are the main categories. Maybe some people grew up Muslim. But, you know, we grew up with the, except for the Hercules, grew up with this code, you know, the Ten Commandments. So one of the commandments is, you know, you obey your father and mother. Of course, so many of us, when we got involved in the Hare Krishna movement, you know, our parents, they weren't happy about it. You know, they didn't like it. And they were trying to convince us why this, we shouldn't do it. You know, so many, you know, maybe even calling in other family members to convince us why it's not a good idea. But in this case, you know, we moved to contextual ethics. So we understood after reading Srila Prabhupada's books that there was a higher principle here. And we rose to that occasion really empowered by Srila Prabhupada, able to do that. So I thought that was something really important to remember, that there's categorical ethics and there's contextual ethics. And we have to understand what is the higher principle involved here. Like, reflecting on it, King Yudhisthira thought, wow, you know, what was the highest principle? To, like, save my wife, or not to play the gambling match that led to a war? So much reflection. The Kshatriya code was so strong. There was a story about a palace, you know, a Hindu palace, and how the Muslims had raided the palace, killed the king, and all the soldiers and the Muslim soldiers were outside the compound, and they wouldn't let the rest of the Muslims in. You know, they were able to guard the palace. So they let them know. They said, okay, we can't come in, but you can't come out, and eventually you're going to starve. And so we have the upper hand, so you better come up with a different solution. And then the Muslim king said, actually, the queen, whose husband had died, he said, if she'll marry me, then the war will be over. And she says, no, I'll never do that. I'm never going to marry you. And he said, well, ultimately, we're going to win, and I'll take you as my wife anyway. He said, well, she said, you can't see me. I'll let you see me through a mirror. So she showed herself through a mirror, and still, he said, I want to marry you even more after he saw her. She was so absolutely heavenly beautiful. So she thought about it. She said, okay, because the war, you know, the war will be over. So the king just all day was celebrating and drinking and smoking and, you know, doing what a non-God conscious king would do. And all the soldiers were also celebrating. So at one point the queen came out on a palanquin. There were many palanquins following her. And they were all celebrating. All the Muslims threw down their weapons. And all of a sudden, underneath the palanquins, all the soldiers came out and defeated the other party. So this Kshatriya nature, it's actually either kill or be killed. There's no middle ground. I heard another story, I can't remember the exact names, but again, it was a Kshatriya who was involved in a battle, and he didn't win, so he came home, and he was pounding on the gate for his wife to let him in. And his wife said, What? No, it's not possible. You couldn't be my husband, because I know my husband would never come home from battle if he didn't win, you know? So I don't know what ultimately happened with that story, but that's the idea of this Kshatriya nature. So, you know, we're constantly bombarded by the effects of Kali Yuga, of falsity. You know, I was thinking and reading a little bit about advertising and how much the population is affected by advertising. I read that in 2020, $378 billion were spent on advertising. And then I also read about all the different advertisers who were sued for false advertising. I was kind of like amazed, like, well, why would they keep on false advertising? And then, you know, having to be fined these high fines. Anybody think of why that could be? Yeah?
Or they still make more money.
Yeah, exactly. They make so much money, they make so many millions and billions of dollars, that they get fined $2 million here, $4 million there, what do they care? It ends up favorable for them in the end. Like some Gerber baby food, they were claiming that it would cure, if your child had allergies, that it would cure them. And they were sued, and they had to pay like, you know, $2 million. Yeah, that's a whole other thing of falsity, yeah. I actually went over that last time when I was speaking. And Luminosity, which is a company that does games, you know, to improve your brain, so they claim that, you know, it would cure Alzheimer's or prevent you from getting Alzheimer's, and they couldn't substantiate their claims, so they were sued $4 million. So just down the line, how much cheating, how much falsity is going on. And I was just thinking about these great kings, like King Prithu, for example, was such an amazing king. King Ranti Dev said that all the ministers, all the citizens, everybody that associated with King Ranti Dev became a pure devotee. And so he was celebrated for that, for all his austerities. You know, one of the things that kills austerity is pride. And I think Shakespeare in his poem said that in this age that even a pauper is proud of his penny. So austerity is not really thought of as something, a great thing to do in this age, although we know that austerity is a Brahmin's greatest wealth. And we see during this Kartik season how many austerities people are performing. They're chanting extra rounds, they're coming to Mangal Arati, even though they're working, they have a very busy schedule. So actually devotees, they enjoy doing austerity because it's fun performing it. It's also fun receiving the benedictions you get from the austerity. So everything's kind of topsy-turvy in this culture. King Prithu, you know, he was performing. It also explains that the citizens, if the king isn't a godly king, if he's not a Raja Rishi, and the citizens are sinful, that the king gets, you know, at least one-sixth of the sinful activities of the population. So think about it. You know, think of all the sinful activities. Think of poor Donald Trump and poor, Biden that are just reaping all this reaction because they're not really able to protect the citizens. That's what a Kshatriya does. He protects the citizens. So when King Prithu came in, and he was protecting the citizens, but the citizens were crying. He was asking, well, what's wrong? And he's, you know, Mother Earth explained that, and the citizens explained that they didn't have enough food to eat, that the earth was not producing. So King Prithu, he went after the earth. He chased her, and she took the form of a cow. And when he finally cornered her, captured her, she explained, like, all these sinful men, you know, they're all using me for sinful purposes, so I don't want to produce because I don't want them to use all my, you know, pure waters and my you know, all my produce for to continue this sinful activity. So we see that happening in Kali Yuga. We see that Mother Earth is cutting back. You know, we learned recently that 30% inflation, that the prices have gone up 30%, you know, foodstuffs, so, you know, tighten your belts and watch what you buy and all of that, because the earth is unhappy that her land is being used in such sinful ways, and her water is being polluted. No matter where you go, even so deep into the ocean, you know, they find huge concentrations of plastic. So you can imagine what that does to the water, what that does to the wildlife in the water. So King Prithu, he was able to restore everything. He had that kind of power. Maharaj Prithu too, later on in this chapter, it explains that even though the three legs of the cow were broken, that Maharaj Prithu, because of his mystic power and because of his great tejas, his great spiritual power, was able to restore Mother Earth and was able to restore the cow, all her legs functioning. So King Prithu, he actually also performed the sacrifice. He wanted to perform a 100-year sacrifice. So that's what he did. And he was on the 100th horse, and guess who became very agitated?
Indra.
Yeah, King Indra. He became very, very upset. He couldn't let it happen. And it really shows the difference between like Krishna and the demigods, because Prabhupada explains that they're still, not always, but often, you know, they're still controlled by the three modes of material nature. So, King Prithu, he was trying to perform this last sacrifice with the horse, and King Indra came in, and he took the horse away, and he ran off with it. And he was dressed in saffron, so the son of King Prithu ran after him, but when he saw that he was dressed in saffron, he dropped his bow and arrows. I can't kill this saintly person, you know? So then Atri, the sage, who had seen the whole thing, said, no, he's not a saintly person. This is Indra. So they got the horse and they brought him back. And they were going on to perform the sacrifice again. And again, it said Indra, he created a darkness over the whole sacrifice. So he was able to go in there again and grab the horse and run off with it. And again, King Prithu's son, he went after him, and again he wasn't able to kill him because he saw the saffron dress, and it just put him off, because the Kshatriyas and the Brahmins, they have such an intimate relationship where, you know, the Kshatriyas, they execute the Brahmins' orders, but they always consult with the Brahmins as far as what to do, so they don't want to make any mistakes. It says the Brahmanas, they tax the citizens. The Kshatriyas collect the taxes. The Brahmanas, they don't collect. So he didn't want to arrest him because he thought he's a sannyasi. Anyway, he was able to capture the horse, and his name became Vijitashva, which meant that he was able to conquer the horse. So they brought it back to the sacrifice, but then Lord Brahma appeared. Lord Brahma said, actually, he said to King Prithu, you know, you don't really need to do this sacrifice. He said, it's not that important. You've got, the kingdom is going fine. Everything is going fine. Don't agitate poor Lord Indra, because he's just afraid of losing his position ultimately. So just let it go. And King Prithu was able to take that good advice. And that's another problem in Kali Yuga. Oftentimes you see that people, you know, even ourselves, but maybe people that we know, or people that we're cultivating, or family members, they're not able to take that good advice. But in this case, King Indra was very repentant. He bowed his head, and he tried to bow to King Prithu, but King Prithu raised him up and embraced him in full forgiveness. So that's something else that's very amazing. And Prabhupada says that forgiveness is, he says that in Krishna book, is the most important quality of a devotee. So, you know, we have ample opportunity to be forgiving, as difficult as it may be. It may be that we don't want to associate someone with someone that's wronged us, but we can at least let them know that they're forgiven, or, you know, in our heart that it's forgiven. But unfortunately, King Indra was the one that introduced this impurity, you know, this idea of false sannyas, and this Prabhupada calls the atheistic philosophy. He introduced this. So he has the very bad reputation for introducing this. Just like when Srini cursed Maharaj Prickett, he was able to also bring in this degradation of cursing someone who is actually a great soul. Of course, there's another aspect throughout all of this, and that is called the bhakti perspective. So just like with King Yudhisthira, he kept on thinking, well, wait a minute. I'm sure that Krishna, the next time I do the bet, that I'll win, and I'll be able to win everything back, you know, including Draupadi. But he didn't. And so this is called the bhakti perspective, that Krishna had another plan. Sometimes things don't seem to be going the way, you know, we're trying. Actually, there was a couple of amazing quotes in this regard that I wanted to read. I was reading them last night, and we were all, like, kind of stunned. Yeah, Pushkar was even laughing. It was so such amazing quote. So this is the Lord speaking to King Prithu. And it was amazing because when Krishna came down, you know, to see King Prithu, because he was so pleased with King Prithu for not becoming agitated, for not being able to finish the 100-year sacrifice, and for forgiving Indra. It said that Prithu had tears in his eyes and he was embracing Prithu within his heart. And it said that Krishna, it says on the higher planets, they're weightless. So even though Krishna came to earth, he still experiences that weightlessness. So when he went to embrace Prithu in order to balance himself, he put his arm around Garuda, it said, to steady himself. So this is some of the advice that Lord Krishna had for King Prithu. My dear King, don't be agitated and anxious because your sacrifices have not been properly executed due to providential impediments. Kindly take my words with great respect. We should always remember that if something happens by providential arrangement, we should not be very sorry. The more we try to rectify such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest region of materialistic thought. Prabhupada says sometimes the saintly or very religious person also has to meet with reversals in life. Such incidents should be taken as providential. In other words, not necessarily karmic, but again, Krishna's making a special arrangement, just like he made a special arrangement for Yudhisthira, even though Yudhisthira was expecting the mercy any moment. Although there may be sufficient cause for being unhappy, one should avoid counteracting such reversals because the more we become implicated in rectifying such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest regions of material anxiety. Lord Krishna has also advised us in this connection. We should tolerate things instead of becoming agitated. And there's one more. Lord Brahma continued, stop the performance of these sacrifices, for they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even amongst the demigods, there are many unwanted desires. Prabhupada says there are many competitors in ordinary business affairs, and the Karmakanda chapters of the Vedas sometimes cause competition and envy amongst karmis. A karmi must be envious because he wishes to enjoy material pleasures to their fullest extent. That is the material disease. Consequently, there is always competition amongst karmis, either in ordinary business affairs or in the performance of yajna. Lord Brahma's purpose was to end the competition between Lord Indra and Maharaj Prithu. Because Maharaj Prithu was a great devotee, an incarnation of God, he was requested to stop the sacrifice so that Indra might not further introduce irreligious systems which are always followed by criminally minded people. So here we are in Kali Yuga, and you know, dealing with what we see every day, you know, so much difficulty, so much cheating, lying, falsity. And so what do we do, you know? And Srila Prabhupada says what we do, because we don't have any Raja Rishis, is that Srimad Bhagavatam becomes our king. Srimad Bhagavatam becomes our leader. And of course the devotees who follow, also the person Bhagavat becomes our leader. So, and we follow that with great care. Just like the Kshatriyas, you know, they have their code, you know, and we, you know, we have our code. Prabhupada is giving us a system of being able to keep ourselves above the modes of material nature. And we can't de-emphasize this. We can't minimize the importance of chanting 16 rounds every day, of following the four Vedic principles, and hearing Bhagavatam class, and watering Tulsi. And, of course, we can't take Charanamrita now. We always take Charanamrita. Maybe have some at home and you use it like that. But that is our, you know, that is our shelter, really, in this age, is being able to just take shelter of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada is the person Bhagavat, and through his purports, everything is being revealed, everything that we need to do, everything that's going on, and every way to be able to save ourselves. Everything. So just like the Kshatriya, it's either kill or be killed. For us, it's either give up our material desires or be conquered by them. You know, they may be always whispering in our ear. They may always be presenting opportunities for us to enjoy in different ways, but we have to understand what the real enjoyment is, what the eternal enjoyment is, and keep up that strength, just like the verse in the seventh chapter, Balabhatam Chaham Kamavaga Rajitam Kamada Dhamma Vira Bhuteshu Kama Shri Bhartarshava, that Krishna says, I'm the strength of the strong. So as we take shelter of Krishna, he will always give us the strength to carry through. Like Yudhisthira didn't give up because things didn't go his way. He didn't say, okay, that's it, Krishna. I'm sick of this, you know, you're supposed to be my friend, my well-wisher, and now you've left us, you know, with nothing. And we've been exiled to the forest. This has happened, that's happened. Because each one of us has our story, you know, where things have not gone our way. You know, so super sad stories. Super, just like in this last, you know, let's say week or two, so many devotees, like, you know, Shankar passed and Sudevi passed, and, you know, so many devotees, they're in the hospital getting a brain biopsy, or they're getting a, you know, they're getting a surgery, one, you know, Vaishnavi today. So there's so many opportunities for feeling like, well, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. And I know I felt that way myself at different times. But somehow we just move along. And Krishna will oftentimes reveals to us later, when they say hindsight is 20/20. So often Krishna reveals us to us later that, you know, or we realize that Krishna knows best, that he actually has our best interests in mind. So I think I'll stop here. If anybody has anything they'd like to add, any discussion, this is a good time to do it.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class.
Thank you.
Surrender. When Kali surrendered to Maharaj Parikshit, surrender was just trying to not be killed, because he didn't follow. He actually wanted to, you know, do what he wanted to do.
That's right.
Yeah, so Maharaj Richard just gave him some situations for existence. But usually when you think of surrender, you think that you surrender to the will of the person and become, you know, they follow their orders.
That's in the contextual ethics, you know, the higher principle of surrender, I think. Because Yeah, yeah, it's true. And the thing is, King Phurket, he wanted to kill him. You know, he did. But another thing that I forgot to say, the inside story, is that when King Phurket was looking at Kali, somehow or other, he had the realization that he shouldn't kill him, because due to Kali Yuga, there were so many souls who were going to be able to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because in this age is very, very special. And the special part of it is, and I went over this last time I spoke, but that in Kali Yuga, there's not a lot of other windows. In other ages, there was like, you sit down and meditate and do these great sacrifices that sometimes took, you know, years and decades to prepare and even to perform. But in Kali Yuga, we don't have those alternatives. Like Prabhupada said, somebody throws you the rope, and he's thrown us the rope of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Don't ask, like, well, what color is it? How did it get here? Why did you throw me this rope? You just grab on. If you're drowning, you grab onto the rope. So that's the benefit of Kali Yuga, and the rope is the chanting of the holy name. So Maharaj Phurket, being Tri Kalagya, at least, if not totally, at least partially, he had that realization. And so that's another reason he didn't kill him, besides the fact that if you kill a surrendered person, even just one that's put down his sword, right? Because he didn't mind killing other people, but when he was going to be killed, then he put down his weapons. So at that point, of course, he was banished from the kingdom. He wasn't allowed to reside there. But then, as the oncoming chapters explain, you know, Maharaj Phurket had it. Kali was like, well, where am I going to go? You know, this whole earth, it's like perfect because it's your kingdom. There's no, you know, there isn't any cheating. You know, there isn't any uncleanness. There isn't any illicit sex. There isn't any of that. So then Maharaj Phurket had to come up with something else, which he did. He said, well, where wealth is hoarded, you can also reside. And we see that that can really be a harbinger of doom, that oftentimes wealth can really bring people down. It can really change their personalities. I know that Ramananda was showing me a picture of the yacht, the huge yacht that Bezos had. It's got swimming pools, it's got slides, and it's got, you know, pool halls, it's got this and like that, and I'm thinking, how much can one person enjoy? You know, is he enjoying more than we are? Totally not. Because he doesn't really know how to enjoy. Okay, does that help?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking, like, in a war, when between kings, yeah, when another person surrendered, they don't kill them, they just become their slave or something.
Something like that, yeah. Thank you.
Hari Bol, I know this one is a little tough, but where is Kali residing now?
Where is he residing now?
I think he still existed. Right? I mean, maybe.
He's got a lot of places to reside now. You know, he's got unlimited place. Every time you turn around, you see Kali, you know. You turn on the TV, you see Kali. You know, it's hard to find a place where he's not. You know, even people, you know, they go to the forest, they go to camp, and then some...
He's not here.
No, he's not here, that's right. That's right.
I have a question.
Okay. What? Right, is Rafalini Kadasi, he can't, because he resides in the grain, that's true.
Shishupal used to like Pandavas. That's why he came to Rajasri Jagna. Loved Yudhishthira Maharaj. But only problem was Yudhishthira Maharaj loves Krishna and Shishupal hated Krishna. So because his friend, even though literally directly not connected, because he loved him and I like him, I don't like the other one now because of that. And it's condemned. Every acharya agrees. But you just say that King Parikshit saw that Kali is a friend of irreligion, so he will not be given shelter. So what's wrong with the Shishupal and Pandavas with the Krishna? Over there we are criticizing, but here we are not criticizing. we are supporting.
Well, I guess he makes some advancement for being friends with you. They're just like, you may have family members who they're not really into the Hare Krishna movement, but they like you, you know? And they like your kids. And some, you know, some of it ultimately wears off. So I guess for Shishupal, he had some benefit, but he's got a problem with Krishna because, what, he killed his brother, he killed, you know, his friend, like that. So he can't forgive. Even though, I mean, whatever Krishna does is for everyone's welfare. So that deep-rooted envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's deep-rooted. Hard to get rid of.
If you are there in front of when Kali, King Parikshit is telling Kali that, look, you are a friend of irreligion, so I cannot give you shelter. And then if that person say, wait, Krishna is friend of everyone. So how do you reconcile this? Krishna is friend of everyone. But because Kali is a friend of irreligion, so Kali cannot be given shelter in his kingdom, wherever the place is.
Because Kali had the free will to do that.
So something wrong with the friendship?
With the friendship between Krishna and Kali?
No, Kali and irreligion.
Oh,
because they are friends, Adharma and irreligion. Irreligion and Kali, they are friends. So Kali is not given a chance to live in there.
I mean, I don't totally understand your question.
Me too, I don't understand. What is the question?
If you are a friend of someone,
yeah.
Say, I went to your party.
Uh-huh.
Just imagine, I went to your party, but you have one friend whom I don't like.
Yeah.
Now I don't like you because you're a friend of that.
Oh, yeah,
and everybody criticized because Krishna is the enemy to Shishupal. But Shishupal is a friend of Yudhishthira, but don't like Krishna. But then when he came, he saw, oh, Yudhishthira loves Krishna, so I don't like Yudhishthira also.
Yeah.
And every acharya gives a commentary, oh, this is horrible.
But that's not reasonable. It's not rational. I mean, you know, we all have people who we're friends with, and maybe they're friends with somebody that we're not friends with. So what? You know? Right?
I mean, that's happening in the devotees. I mean, I didn't want to mention the name, but it's happening already. I see. That's true, but Shishupal will not buy your word.
And sometimes if you're stuck with something, you know, with not being able to forgive, you have to really pray to Krishna to help you, you know, to help you with that problem. Because, you know, they say that it means you're harboring anger, you're harboring resentment. And, you know, it's hard for Krishna to reside in a heart that's full of anger and resentment, so we don't want to feel those feelings. We want to just be able to forgive and move on. Again, someone does something horrible, it doesn't mean you have to keep associating with them. But we can, if we understand that person is a spirit soul and is guided by the three modes of material nature, we can understand that's not the real them, right? There's a soul inside. So that's helpful. Even to do book distribution, you know, there has to be that aspect there. I remember, you know, I did book distribution for 15 years, and I remember all kinds of things that happened. I remember somebody flicking their cigarette ashes, you know, down my neck one time, you know, because they didn't like the devotees. I also saw a real lot of turnarounds, you know, people who hated us who ended up loving us. People who worked at the airport. You know, so I think that's the way it goes. You
devotees
just...
are compassionate.
Pardon?
Devotees are very compassionate.
Yeah.
But then you have some reaction like Bhima, when Shishupal was yelling Nectar Devotion to overdrive, Bhima's muscle was shaking. Bhima, who is that guy of passion? That is also glorified.
Well, of course.
I'm not saying we should
Well, it's true because, I mean, he is a Kshatriya, so it's true that, you know, I mean, Duryodhana, he was so terrible. I didn't realize that he actually put Durvasa up to the task when they were exiled of going to the forest and saying, you know, go there after Chakri's already eaten and then, you know, ask for food. I was like, well, it was really a rotten thing to do, you know, although in the end it turned out okay. So I mean, you kind of feel like, it's not like people don't react, and it's not like, I mean, come on, you love it when Duryodhana gets his thigh broken. Everybody's like, Hari Bol. He needed to like take another birth. So sometimes I think that's just the best thing that can happen.
Hari Bol. It said that the Kshatriya never surrenders, but when we read about somebody becoming an emperor and the horse goes around, we also read that the Kshatriya surrendered and accepted the sovereignty of the king. So I thought that was a little contradictory.
I'm sorry.
In the purport we read,
yes,
that Kshatriyas never surrendered.
Right.
The real Kshatriyas never surrendered.
Mm-hmm.
But when we read that somebody became an emperor and the Yajna horse is going around, it happened in Lord Ram, Yudhishthira, you know, Vidhi, Prithu, that all those things surrendered. All those little provinces, they surrendered.
You mean because they lost the dice game?
No, kind of thing? And also, I want to take a minute to welcome Agwa to the first time at Hare Krishna Temple. Uh-huh. She had just moved here from Panama City.
Oh, nice.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for coming.
I met her at DMV just 2 days ago. Yesterday she came to Krishna House. And the first thing she asked, is there any service I can do?
Oh, wow. You know what they say about that? In Nectar Devotion it says, if someone takes to devotional service easily in this life, it's because they practiced devotional service in their last life and they're just picking up and moving on. So, that looks like that's you. Thank you very much.